Hello, everyone. This is Tom Regan. I'm a licensed addiction counselor and a certified grief counselor for Heartview Foundation here in Bismarck. And welcome to our program. We call this program Recovery Chronicles. And we celebrate recovery with a capital R, I hope. It's a lot to celebrate. And we interview people who are in long-term quality recovery. And our very special guest today is Don Reed, and he's 60 years old. He's from Bismarck, formerly from California. We'll learn about that. And when I asked him what his drug of choice was, he said, many. And welcome. Thanks for having the courage to appear on Recovery Chronicles.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here. So what I actually said is, what do you got?
Yeah, I know.
Because that's what I did. In my later days, I just took whatever you had to change the way I felt.
And I've heard that described as, since I work in the addiction field, people say, well, I was a garbage can. whatever people had, I smoked or swallowed or snorted or what have you. So, Don, tell us a little bit about your growing up years.
Let's see. I was born and raised in California, Silicon Valley. I was the oldest of three boys. You know, and remarkably enough, we were all drug addicts, and we're all alcoholics. My parents didn't drink.
Amazing.
Raised in a very violent household, a lot of fighting, mom getting beat. I remember when I was probably 13, I started running away. And the strangest thing is we lived in a cul-de-sac, and I would run away. My first couple of times was running away across the street to the alcoholic family. Strange, but that's what I did. And you know, I ran away just to get away from the chaos and the madness. But strangely enough, during my recovery years, when I got out of rehab the first time, I went back home because they understood. I mean, their dynamics and their relationship with my parents changed. Strange as it was, but it did.
And you went back home, meaning where?
To California. I went into the rehab the first time, I had nowhere to go. I was broke. And I went home, and they helped me out just to get back on my feet.
Okay. Yeah. And where did that first rehab take place?
Let's see. That took place January of 1991. Was my first rehab in Campbell, California, 28-day in-day patient. And it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it? And the obvious question is, did it stick?
It did not stick.
Yeah. You know, and here's a good time to point out— and that's very common. I mean, so many patients that come to Heartview and people that we meet in recovery, they say, "Well, it was my eighth recovery, my ninth recovery, my tenth recovery," you know, or period in treatment, so to speak.
Yeah, my problem was, you know, they took the drugs and alcohol away, and I loved it. It was like a paid vacation. I was a union carpenter, and when I left the recovery place, I got struck wonderful. You know, I got my contractor's license, which I had talked about forever. I bought a house. I got my kids back. But I still went to meetings, but I didn't do the work that was necessary. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't do the steps.
Yep.
But I fellowshiped really good, and I hung out with the guys.
Sure.
And they're the ones that always drew me back into the program.
Yeah. You hear that story. So when it finally stuck, to use that word, you know, how old were you and what made the difference?
Let's see. I'll tell you what made the difference is I bounced in and out for 17 years.
That's common.
Because I hung out with these guys and I wondered what they had. Man, their lives were happening. They had families, happy families, successful business life. And I was doing okay.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't put the stuff away, the drugs and alcohol away. So what happened is I finally saw this one guy at meetings all the time. He's a little Irish guy, thought he was a tough guy, sponsored a few men, and I liked the way, and I liked what he had. So I asked him to be my sponsor. And he taught me accountability, integrity. He says, we're going to meet at 5. First meeting, I showed up at 5:05. He says, you're late. I'll see you next week.
Wow.
So I wasn't late anymore.
That kind of sponsor.
And that's what I needed. I needed a tough guy.
Yeah. Did he have wisdom, do you think? Or
He had love.
Okay.
You know, all the guys I hung out with there, I call it my herd. It was my guys.
Uh-huh.
And he did have some wisdom, and he had good advice.
Mm-hmm. So how long have you been in recovery now?
I got sober July 10th of 2008.
Okay.
And I've been sober since then, yeah.
Good long time.
Yeah.
What do you think have been some of your secrets of to recovery? What would your best advice be? I mean, if you were sponsoring someone, and you probably do, but what's your best advice there? How do you stay sober?
How do I stay sober is I go to meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I have a herd of guys, not only sponsees, but other men in the program.
Sometimes called a support group.
Huh? I call it my herd.
Yep.
And what I use that is like a sounding board. I'll tell them my secrets. You're only as sick as your secrets.
Yeah.
And I can tell them anything and they don't judge me. Mm-hmm. And another thing we're big on is we're willing to risk our relationship to tell the other person the truth.
Nice.
And that's what works for me. And the other things, I get a sponsor, I work the steps, I'm active, and I put my hand out to the newcomer.
Well, as you know, or probably know, Heartview is a treatment center that was based on the 12 steps.
Mm-hmm.
It got started in 1964, you know, and
in Mandan, right?
In Mandan,
yeah.
And my first important meeting in 1981 was at Heartview Mandan, and on the bluff overlooking the Heart River, which is how it got its name. And that's when my wife and I first moved here. So Heartview's been, you know, very, very important to me. But so the programming, in other words, has always been spiritually based. So how has spirituality been part of your recovery? I know that's a personal question.
Oh, it's all good.
Yeah.
So I was raised without a God. We didn't go to church. My dad was racist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anybody that went to church was weak, and you don't need that kind of stuff. So that's what I was raised with. So when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no idea about God. So that was the easy part for me. And then after doing the steps, I had a spiritual awakening.
Mm-hmm.
And I know God's has my back.
Yeah.
You know, because in those 17 years of trying to get sober, you know, I tried to commit suicide once because I didn't want to use, but I did want to use. And I just said, screw it. And I tried suicide and it didn't work. So God's always been there for me.
Yeah.
I just didn't know.
Yeah, yeah. And spiritual awakenings can happen in so many different ways.
They happened at meetings for me last night. I was at a meeting that had a spiritual experience.
Yeah.
Just from what people say.
Yeah, you know, and that's the beautiful thing about support group meetings. I met you at a support group meeting, and that happens to be a very special meeting. And the way I describe it is the spirit lives there. Yeah. There's so much enthusiasm there, love, et cetera. And as an addiction counselor, I'm sure you'll understand this. It can be very frustrating trying to convey to some patients, maybe even better than half, that guess what? Spirituality, you need spirituality. You know, you need a higher power. And it just, you know, it can turn them off at first. I mean, later on they might get it, but can you understand that frustration? And
absolutely. I deal with it all the time with the newcomers.
Yeah.
You know, you get a new guy and you start to read the book and he goes, I know. Okay, well, when you don't know everything, call me.
Right. Yeah.
Hopefully they make it back.
Right.
You know, I've lived here like 2.5 years, and I think I've already buried 5 guys or 5 people that I know in this area that have died from overdoses.
Yeah. Isn't that? Yeah.
And California was a lot more than that.
Yeah. And frankly, you know, I have not been an addiction counselor very long. I think it'll be 2 years in December or November. Well, this month that I'll be a licensed counselor. I don't have to tell you, I've already lost patients, including one very young patient, to an overdose. And so, and that just kills you.
And we had one yesterday that committed suicide here.
Oh, no.
And you know, that's just that's what the disease wants, is it wants us dead.
And what do they say, you know, about the disease? There's three ways out, right? You know what I'm going to say? It's either jail,
institution, or death.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a miserable life.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's right. So how do you attract people to the program, you know?
Well, it is attraction rather than promotion.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm kind of outgoing. I shake hands a lot, and I can break the ice really easy. You know, I remember one time I was at my home group, which is their recovery house in town. Mm-hmm. And I asked this one guy, he was new. I go, so how you doing? He goes, oh, I'm doing okay. And I said, why don't you tell your face that? Because he was just miserable. And he asked me to be a sponsor after the meeting.
Nice.
You know, I just try to be open. I try to welcome them. I try to give them a little bit of hope.
Yeah.
Because we are not a glum lot.
Right.
I have more fun now than I've ever had in my whole life.
Yeah. Isn't that great? I mean, and that's why so often you hear the phrase, attitude of gratitude. Isn't that the truth?
Yep.
And I happen to think that gratitude is wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's one of the first things that I heard, that phrase, you know, you better develop an attitude of gratitude. I'm not saying I did it right away, but the more, and I think that's just plain old wisdom. I mean, I don't care who you are, whether you're, an addict, or a person with diabetes, or a person with cancer, or just a person.
Yeah, I remember in California, I was in a funk.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to my sponsor, I don't know what's going on. Yeah, I'm not happy, this and that. He goes, write a gratitude list.
Yeah, which I did first thing this morning.
Did you? So yes. I got this guy right now. He's been in a funk for 3 or 4 days. I go, write a gratitude list. He went by my house today. I go, did you write your gratitude list? He goes, not yet. I go, okay. Yeah. I can't write it for him.
Yeah. Well, our guest today is Don Reed, a person in long-term recovery, living in Bismarck now, and formerly from California. Let's talk about gratitude a little bit and keeping a gratitude list, because I think it's just good advice. I learned about keeping a gratitude journal from a person whose profession is music, by the way. It had nothing to do with addiction, but she was a journal keeper. And I stole that idea from her, and I keep it simple. And this is what I did this morning. I like spiral-bound notebooks. It's just one of those things.
Yeah,
you know?
Just turn the page.
Yeah, and I like Eversharps. And by the way, my children tease me when I use the term Eversharp. They say, Dad, it's an automatic pencil, you know. So I usually number the page from 1 to 10, and then I just start writing down things that I'm grateful for. And of course, it usually starts with, I write down the words, my recovery. And next, I'll usually write my health. But that, depending upon the day, I might write down my family.
It changes.
Yeah. You know, or, hey, it's Friday.
Time to go fishing.
Yeah, that's right. You know, so that's one of our secrets. And if you're, we don't care who you are, but if you find yourself down a little bit sometimes, try to keep a gratitude list or a gratitude journal.
One of mine for sure is my higher power. You know, mm-hmm. before, you know, it just is without God, I have nothing. And then another recently has been being in North Dakota.
Yeah.
You know, this is a beautiful state. I'm from California with millions of people. Yeah. I came here knowing zero people.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I just fell in love with North Dakota.
How long you been here now?
About two and a half years.
Yeah. And how do you feel about the weather?
I forgot how bad last winter was.
Yeah.
I mean, the weather is the weather.
Yeah. There's very little you can do about it.
Yeah.
That's another reason why one of my favorite expressions is, or sayings, including in recovery, is it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. Speaking of sponsors, I had a sponsor who said that all the time, and I stole that. And I have a mug that says it is what it is. and that's nothing but a short serenity prayer, right?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you the other version, but we're on the air.
But what are your other secrets to recovery, do you think? I mean, what has kept you in long-term recovery?
Sponsorship, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, having a sponsor. I know when I moved here, I had my California sponsor, mm-hmm. and I would call mm-hmm. him And he would say, how's everything going, Don? Oh, everything's going great. Everything's going great, Jimbo. And the wheels are falling off because I'm not eyeball to eyeball.
Yeah.
And then I finally, about a year or so ago, I got a sponsor. The first one didn't work out, but I got another sponsor. And we meet once a week. We read the book. Mm-hmm. How are things going? I share my life with him. He shares his with me. And it's a beautiful thing. You know, I need a sponsor that has a successful marriage, kids, because that's what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. And he has great input, and I just love him to death.
Yeah.
And that's what I try to be to my guys.
Yeah. I give a lecture at Heartview about sponsorship. And that lecture is, you might say, is one of my responsibilities. But
it definitely is.
Yeah, yeah. And usually when I begin the lecture, I dedicate it to all of my past sponsors because I've buried a couple of sponsors. And then, of course, people say, well, you must be hard on sponsors. But it just so happens that I chose older fellas.
Yeah.
And actually, unfortunately, a couple of them died from emphysema. And you know why? They were heavy smokers.
Yeah.
I usually dedicate this lecture, you know, to all my past sponsors, and then I talk about them. Then I turn to our patients, and I say, "So, what are you looking for, or did you look for, or would you look for in a sponsor?"
A lot of people think they have to interview. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on, just pick somebody for a temporary sponsor, just somebody you can talk to,
right?
Because when you get out of those treatment facilities. Like a gentleman was talking last night, it's scary when you walk out of the doors because you're in a safe environment. Now you're outside on the streets.
Yeah.
And if you're not used to, you know, one of my first assignments to my guys is call me every day for 30 days at a set time. And it's not because I want to talk to you. I don't, you know, it's get used to picking the phone up.
Yeah. And the accountability.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you hear the saying in treatment that it's usually people, places and things that make you, if that's the right terminology, but it's usually people, places or things that cause you to relapse. What's meant by that? How do you interpret that?
People, places and things?
Yeah.
Well, they say when you get sober, nothing changes. You got to change everything and you got to get rid of those old friends and playgrounds.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't go to the bar to play pool with 1 month of sobriety. Come on. What are you thinking?
Yep. Yeah.
So, you know, I have no reason to go to a bar. You know, I like to gamble a little bit, mostly with my guys back in California. We do a men's retreat each year. Where we play a lot of poker. But I got no reason to go here and play blackjack in a bar.
Right.
You know, I don't do it by myself. It's more of a guy thing
with
my guys. So I don't go to bars. I just don't go anywhere I don't need to be.
Yeah, and people, places, and things.
Yeah, people, places, and things. And, you know, moving here from California has been an adventure, but I don't have people, places, and things here because I never got loaded here. You know, but in California, it's big, and everywhere I drove, there's memories. Oh, I remember that. Oh, I got busted here. I scored there.
Yeah.
So it's really nice being here, and it's really fresh.
Sure. That's kind of what happened to me. When my wife and I moved here in 1981, we were newlyweds, you know, God bless her for taking a chance on someone.
That's a big risk.
On someone in early recovery, really. But it did turn out to be so good for me in so many ways because I didn't have the same old dives, you know, or hangouts or the, you know.
It's memories.
Or those loser friends, so to speak.
Or that magnet pulling you in there. I know Joe and Bill are in there. Let's go see what they're doing.
Exactly.
Who cares what Joe and Bill are doing?
Yeah. So it did turn out to be therapeutic, you know.
Yep.
So people place, and I like that saying that you brought up. If nothing changes, nothing changes.
And you got to change everything.
Yeah.
It takes time, but you have to.
And one of the things we often say as counselors is, change your cell phone number. I mean, because those same darn people keep calling them up. And let's face it, especially when you're early in recovery, if someone dangles that carrot in front of you, chances are you might break down and say, okay, I'll meet you in the parking lot or whatever, you know. It's just, and I think that cell phones can be such a, uh, Can be so dangerous. Let's put it that way.
Not only cell phone. Well, I don't know if you were at the meeting last Friday night, but the speaker there kind of talked about changing your cell phone number.
Yeah.
He goes, what's the big deal? There's millions of phone numbers. And then he also talked about deleting people from Facebook.
Right.
Because that's, the social media thing.
Yeah,
sure. You got to get rid of that stuff.
Yeah. So what is your life like now? I mean, it sounds like it's good. Most of it is.
I'm blessed.
Yeah.
I'm really blessed to be sober. I'm blessed to be in North Dakota.
Mm-hmm. And you're in a relationship.
Yes, I am in a relationship. And it's like we told our friend outside, I haven't had my best day yet.
Yeah.
I just keep showing up and doing what I did yesterday. Yeah. Pretty sure I'll be sober tomorrow, but you don't know.
Right. Yeah.
I moved to North Dakota and went to work for a construction company. And in California, I worked for myself for 25 years, and that's what I'm starting to do again because that's what I really love to do. And it's kind of hard not knowing anybody, but I think I'll be okay.
Yeah. See, it's that attitude of gratitude, you know?
Yeah.
And so say someone's listening to this program and they kind of know they're in trouble. I mean, and they've been procrastinating. They know they need to do something. What's your best advice?
My best advice would be to go to a meeting if you're willing to go to a meeting.
And those meetings are listed in the newspaper. I mean, you could buy a newspaper or they're online, aren't they? I mean,
they are.
Where there are support group meetings.
Yep. And go to a meeting, put your hand out. And I think we have like 58 meetings a week here, which is a lot.
Yeah,
I'm from California. Where I live, there was like 800 meetings.
I'm from Milwaukee, and
so you got a lot there too,
all day long. Yeah,
but you know, this sobriety thing is that door might be open just for a smidgen, and you really got to take the opportunity. And it's actually a gift from God. I mean, for you to be able to walk into a room of whatever recovery group you go to, it might only happen once, and that's what I tell these kids that are in the meetings. This might be your only chance.
Yeah.
Because once you go out, you might not make it back. This could be your golden ticket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what would you say to a family member? You know, a mom, dad, brother, sister, spouse, and their loved one is going down the tubes. What do you say to them?
You know, there is support groups for them too. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was trying to get my son into recovery, he was a heroin addict. And I put him in rehabs in Oakland where he was only a white kid. And it was called Thunder Road, really tough place in Oakland. And then I put him in another one and another one. And then finally my guys pulled me aside and said, Don, you be his dad. We'll try to get him sober. So, you know, I think tough love. And sometimes you just need to let him hit bottom.
Yeah.
As painful it's painful.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the only way. Well, they got to hit bottom and stop digging.
Yeah, and that's a phrase that you hear, hitting bottom, and that's different for
everybody.
For everybody, my bottom was rolling a car, a very nice car, really in a blackout, and I wasn't strapped in, and then somehow or other I walked away from it, and that was. Telling me this is a matter of life or death. And the good news is I could have killed somebody.
Multiple times.
I could have wiped out a family.
Yeah.
And thank God I did not. And so I could be sitting in the penitentiary today. I mean, if not for whatever, you know. But
well, if I got what I deserved, I wouldn't be sitting here today. You know, by the grace of God. I think I'm supposed to go out there and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I try to do.
Yeah.
And I really love the young people in AA, in Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah.
I got a friend in California who says, you get sober and the world's your oyster. For these young kids, they have no idea. But what are you going to do?
Right.
You can't give it away. You got to work for it. It's work.
Yeah. And I think you know this, that on Monday nights, Heartview has a group for families. And
isn't it called the Heart or something?
It is.
Yeah.
And that's an acronym, it's HEART, and that stands for Helping Everyone Achieve Recovery Today. And it's free. And you're welcome. Everyone's welcome. It's on Monday nights. And from 6 until 7, it's educational. In other words, We might have someone in recovery come in and talk. We might have law enforcement. We might have a doctor. I mean, it's really, we might show a video because, as you know, Heartview owns owns a library of videos. But and then the second hour from 7 until 8 is sharing. And so we see a lot of moms, dads, spouses, brothers, sisters, and it's exactly what you said, you know, that they're at wit's end and they don't know where to turn. I like to be a part of that. And sometimes I speak or I help run the meeting. And you'll appreciate this because you have that attitude of gratitude. And that is, that hopefully it's my job to show them that recovery is possible. And I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but to introduce myself rightly as a person in long-term recovery, certainly as a licensed addiction counselor, but to say that my many years of recovery is proof that, hey, it's possible.
Well, you know, I've been there quite a few times.
Yeah.
And I was there one night when the kid that got in that bad accident, Mandan,
right,
was there and he spoke, and that was powerful.
Yes,
but
yes.
The key thing there is the hour afterwards where they can share.
Yes.
Is it's a safe place.
Yeah.
And you're not the only one going through this. And you can make friends there.
Yes, you can. Yep.
I mean, it's not affiliated with any other thing, but it's its own little program, but it's very special.
Yeah. Yeah, it is well attended. I mean, it varies just like everything else, but we've had over 20 people in the room from time to time. And one night, and you'll appreciate this, one night we showed a video, maybe you saw it, and I think the name of the video is called something like Drunk in Public. I think that is the name of it. And in this particular video, someone in law enforcement, I think, followed a chronic alcoholic for something like 22 years. And we saw this very tragic progression of his disease. And he was arrested. I think he was arrested something like 500 times. I'm not kidding. And he spent most of his life in California because of the weather. You know, he was mostly homeless, so he could live on the streets. But what I'm getting at is everybody was so bummed out after this movie. This was this Heart group. And, you know, the good news was this gentleman died sober. I mean, I don't know how many days, but he actually died sober. And law enforcement knew that and verified that. But, you know, let's face it, it was the story of a chronic alcoholic and therefore kind of a story of despair. And it really hit me. And that's when I realized that it was my job as a person in long-term recovery to keep on talking about recovery.
To spread the word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, to spread the word.
That's my job.
Yeah, that's right.
So Dr. Bob says.
Yeah.
That's why he does it for fun and for free.
Yeah.
And it's
his
obligation.
Yeah. Yeah. And to smile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not perfect and we can't smile all the time every day. But
we have bad days.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's life.
Mm-hmm. But to proclaim and celebrate.
There's a way out. There's a way out.
To proclaim and celebrate. So, God, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
It's really been a great pro. Our guest is Don Reed, a person in long-term recovery and now lives among us in Bismarck, thank goodness. But I'll see you soon, I know. Hey, we close the program every week with a serenity prayer, so let's do that.
Perfect.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thanks again.
Thank you.